As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to The View from the Lane, the multi-award-winning Tottenham Hotspur podcast from The Athletic. Joining me, your host, Charlie Eccleshare, is The Athletic's James Moore. In today's episode, we'll discuss UEFA club coefficient rankings, the Premier League's new profit and sustainability rules, and Fulham away. Apologies, Danny couldn't be here this morning. His internet is not working, and despite turning it off and on again, for once, that actually didn't work. And so in the equivalent of someone getting injured in the warm-up, I've had to step up at the last minute. So let's see how we go. But yeah, James is here with me. Hello, James.
Hello. We should also say we also have a player missing on international duty because Jack is off to Gareth Southgate's press conference today. So we're down to two because of that.
It's real bare bones stuff.
Can we appeal to get the podcast postponed? Can you do that?
Well, we did effectively do that, but I guess the equivalent was we couldn't find a time. Yeah, is there like a Jamie Donnelly equivalent?
Yeah, we can get some journalism student from somewhere to fill in.
This is your chance if you ever wanted to be on it. We'll do a call out.
That isn't true. Please don't do that.
What was the last double header or double hander?
Me and Danny did one last season after the Marseille away game.
Did?
It was like
yes.
a big moment in the season. And for whatever reason, there was only two of us on the podcast the next morning.
I remember that so vividly. I was on paternity leave.
That explains why one of you was missing.
Yeah, and the baby would have been about a month old, and I was walking in the pouring rain, just because it was the only place he'd sleep, with my hood up, him on me in a sling, and listening to that podcast after the famous Højbjerg winner.
It's nice to feel part of your fatherhood experience in such a sort of intimate way. I guess Jack was in Marseille, that's why he couldn't do it, I suppose.
Yeah, it must have been getting a flight or something. But anyway, expect more of this kind of admin and logistics with me in the hot seat. What I get is, I guess, James, slightly odd, unusual place to start, but let's go with West Ham Freiburg,
the big one.
Yeah, weirdly has become actually quite important for Spurs this season because of the coefficient rankings. And just a very brief recap on this. So obviously this is the question as to whether England will get 4 or 5 Champions League spots, which I don't know, I find it all a bit unsatisfying because we don't yet know if Spurs are aiming, well, not aiming for 4th or 5th, as Andrew will say, they're aiming higher than that. But basically if it's fourth, then they're in a big fight with Villa. One, I think they'll win, but if it's 5th, then they're looking really good to get in the Champions League. But basically, English fans or Spurs fans want to be supporting other English teams, really, which is quite odd because that's not generally how it works. But the better the English teams do, the higher the coefficient they'll have. And it's a race between Italy, Germany and England to get for their league to get that 5th spot. At the moment, it's Italy and Germany who are 1st and 2nd and England are 3rd. So this is a big equivalent of a 6-pointer. I don't know how many points it is in the coefficients, but yeah. What's your take on this, James? I mean, do you does it mean you're wanting West Ham to win tonight?
Well, I'm wanting Freiburg to lose. I think that's an important distinction. No, but to answer your question, look, this game in particular, given the nature of the rankings and the fact that the Bundesliga is in one of those top two spots as we record, and Premier League is third, pretty significant. Probably, unless Man City draw Dortmund or Munich, or Arsenal draw Dortmund or Munich in the Champions League, obviously that would be another kind of big potential moment of change. But any match between an English team and a German team between now and the end of the season, you know, it could be Liverpool, Leverkusen in the... I was going to keep saying UEFA Cup. In the Intercity Fairs Cup. just to cover for Danny a little bit there.
Danny's on
Any match between those two leagues, or teams in those two leagues, will be significant. And yes, reluctantly, I will be backing my beloved Hammers tonight.
Taking that to the natural endpoint, where do you sit on this hypothetical of, let's say, Spurs have finished fifth, and then
I think I know where this is going.
Yeah, between Arsenal and, let's not say Bayern Munich, because that's too loaded and adds in a whole other dimension. But let's say they're playing Dortmund, and the winner means their league gets the fourth. So it would mean Arsenal winning the Champions League to get Spurs into the Champions League the following season. Who are you rooting for?
That actually is quite an easy question to me. In previous seasons, maybe not, but I would want Arsenal to lose that. I think, I'm pretty sure I said this before, and I don't think this is just like a sort of emotional hedge. I want Spurs to be in the Champions League. Like, I want them to be playing as at high a level as possible. But having been in there so many times, or a relatively decent number of times over the last decade or so, like, it's not going to make or break me emotionally. I don't think it's going to make or break this team if they're not in it next season. So in those specific circumstances, I would want the English team to lose.
I mean, it is interesting. I've had a few fans saying to me they'd rather be in the Europa League than the Champions League next season. I think for a variety of reasons. One is a sense that Spurs would have a better chance of winning the Europa League, obviously, and, you know, winning a trophy is important. I think another thing as well, and this was something I felt during last season's Champions League, was that it's weird because it's... And Postecoglou was then talking about this in his press conference last week, was that it's obviously held up as kind of the Holy Grail. But you can feel, depending on the draw, sometimes that it's not as great as it's maybe built up to be. I mean, you would have been there, James, for those games against, was it Sporting, Frankfurt and Marseille. And it was hardly kind of a thrill a minute.
Yeah, there wasn't really, I mean, look, you mentioned the Højbjerg goal from the Marseille away game. I mean, aside from that.
That was it.
And the moment, famously, at the end of the Sporting home game that we were denied. Other than that, there wasn't a whole lot to it. There wasn't a big moment or like a sort of, you know, like a breathtaking sense of this being a huge occasion at any point. So yeah, you're probably right, and that probably would lead you to think it would be better to go into the... I nearly said UEFA Cup again. Into the Europa League and actually try and win that. But I've seen so many seasons where Spurs have gone into the Europa League and your expectation pre-season is that they should be one of, if not the best team in that competition, you know, including when they dropped into it in 2016-17. And for whatever reason, I think mostly sort of psychological, in as much as they haven't always taken it seriously as perhaps they should or could, they haven't got anywhere near winning that competition. I mean, I think the furthest they've got was in 2007 when they lost to Sevilla in the quarterfinals. I don't think they've got as far as that since. I mean, maybe
what about
I'm not
the 12-13 when they was it Inter they played?
Is that the quarters? They lost to maybe that was the quarters again. They lost to Basel. Mo Salah's Basel. But I mean that's a prime example of a season when, you know, they were doing very well in the league at that point. I mean, it was 71 points they got, and it was their best Premier League points total up to then. Gareth Bale in his peak Gareth Bale season and whatever else. And I think he might have been injured for the Basel games.
What I would say on the Europa League, though, I do think that there is something a bit unsatisfying about it. It takes so long for it to feel kind of proper and tense. Like, most managers of English teams, rightly or wrongly, play the group stage at about 70%, basically hoping they can do just about enough to win the group and absolutely no more. So, like, I personally think it'd be far better for Spurs to be in the Champions League than the Europa League. I mean, the other thing as well is the financials, which, you know, obviously people will say, you know, that shouldn't be the be-all and end-all. Absolutely, it shouldn't. But we are in a world where, you know, there are these profit and sustainability rules and the rules have just been changed. And the rules now are about having, you know, being able to spend a certain proportion of your revenue on wages. So it becomes almost more important in a way that you are bringing in this revenue. And, you know, a lot of people have views, understandably, on the fact that this does seem to be massively favouring the biggest clubs and, you know, limiting what the smaller clubs can spend. And it'll be interesting to see how this affects Spurs, because they are, you know, we've seen the fact that the PSR rules as they were kind of in January, Spurs were basically the only Premier League club to actually spend much. And their the proportion of their revenue to wages is always way lower than some of their rivals. Like they're very good in that regard. They've got a lot of headroom. So we'll see how that changes things. I mean, I don't know, James, the changes this week viewed through a Spurs prism, if you had any views. I mean, that, you know, tends to be how we see these things.
No, I mean, I guess what I'd say is that the way FFP and PSR have evolved over the last decade has favoured Spurs. I think that's probably fair to say. And the way they've run the club over that period of time, and I know people have had misgivings about that, and I think in some instances, rightly so. But if the upshot of that is the club can be infinitely more competitive in the next decade or however long than they have been before, then I suppose you'd argue it was worth it. I guess it's a question of whether these changes or evolutions favour Spurs more than before, but I said, from my understanding of it, is it sort of feels like they probably do.
Yeah, so basically the main change is that, you know, previously this was about kind of the losses that you could, that you were allowed to make, and that's what Everton and Nottingham Forest have fallen foul of. The change is more, it's now about limiting the proportion of your revenue that you can put towards things like wages. And that is really complicated, and I do think that is going to be really hard for a lot of teams because it does massively limit their spending. But just broadening it out as well anyway, thinking about, you know, we've talked about the financial advantages that Premier League clubs have. I do wonder, just on that point about, you know, Spurs would have a better chance of the Europa League than the Champions League, which is obviously true. But, I mean, watching the Champions League knockout ties over the last few weeks, what have your thoughts been about where, how well Spurs could do? Because certainly, from my perspective, I do feel like the Premier League is so strong now that, assuming Spurs have the kind of sum we're expecting, where they bring in a few more, you know, really big players who can help this team, like, I don't think they'd be out of their depth at all.
No, I think they'd probably quite quickly find themselves at the sort of level they were sort of 2017, 2018, you know, able to blow away big established European teams, but also having some vulnerabilities. You know, you could, you know, you watch Real Madrid, even Barcelona and Bayern, in spite of how much kind of, you know, forelock tugging there has been about their level of performance compared to previous seasons, I think Spurs in games against those kind of teams would have incredibly the kind of matches that everyone, like neutrals, would absolutely love to see. They'd be like mad end-to-end ding-dongs, to use a technical term. That I think I was going to say were Spurs trademark in the Champions League previously, but that probably isn't quite true. But there definitely were a few games where, you know, the Man City one is obviously a standout, Ajax to a degree. The Madrid home game in, when was that, 2017? Was quite an open game. Like, Madrid did have chances, so it wasn't like Spurs absolutely wiped the floor with Madrid. I think they'd kind of be in that sort of ballpark in terms of performance and level. I don't know whether that's going to be or would be enough to get them as far as they got in the Champions League before.
I guess the
because
big
I think that, well, the flip of that is obviously, like, if you're in open games against, you know, Red Bull Salzburg or whatever, are you going to get caught out in games where previously Spurs would have just kept the ball and won a game 1-0 or whatever? You know,
yeah,
that's the flip, I guess.
But also, I think the challenge, or one of the big challenges going in Champions League, obviously, this season having had the free midweeks, and if you're in the Europa League, you can mix and match a little bit. If you're in the Champions League, then having to play strong teams in all those midweeks, and there are going to be extra games next season, that would mean maybe they'd, you know, have to do quite a lot of surgery next in the summer rather than a bit of tinkering if they want to be competitive in both, because that is a big step up.
So it's 8 games, isn't it, in the group in this mega group next season, the Swiss model group next season, where the top,
which means
the
you
top,
have a couple in January, I think.
So you have the top 8 go through and the next 16 go into playoffs, is that right? I think
something
that's right.
Like that.
So like it's going to be almost harder to get knocked out than go through, and you're going to have these extra matches, so it will be particularly draining. And you're right, if they're in it, they do need to bolster the squad in several positions. But it is worth saying that the Europa League is going to be formatted in a similar way, isn't it? So they'll have the extra games, that almost certainty of going through into the knockout stages or into at least the playoff round and whatever else. So, you know,
yeah, but you can it's easier to rotate.
That is true. Yeah,
the extent to which that helps is maybe debatable.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Wanted to talk about this Kulusevski interview that he gave with the Players' Tribune. And if you haven't read it, I really would urge you to do so. It's really interesting. And I mean, those familiar with the Players' Tribune will know it's written in a very identifiable style. But it works well. And it is a really interesting insight into him and the sort of doubts that he's had about himself, which I'm sure is true of, you know, most footballers, but we don't really get to see that. And there's this amazing character that emerges, his older sister, Sandra, who, wow. I mean, she is
the second most significant Sandra in Spurs history.
I was thinking that, yeah, real Spurs heritage with Sandra. But rather than Sandra being kind of the person belittled, it's Sandra very much doing the belittling. Because, you know, normally when the sort of cliche among footballers is, yeah, you know, I'm my own harshest critic. In this instance, it's a real case of, yeah, my sister is my harshest critic. So in one bit he says, she's seen me play since I was a kid, and when something is bothering me, she can tell. When I was struggling at Juve, she said, Deki, when did you become weak? Weak italicized for emphasis. But bringing it into his Spurs time, and this is a period, James, you'll know very well, his debut against, or his Premier League debut anyway, against Southampton. He talks about how much of a disaster that was. And he says, we were leading 2-1 at home to Southampton and my job was to lock up the win. 76th minute, I come on. 79th minute, goal Southampton. 82nd minute, goal Southampton. Full time, Spurs 2, Southampton 3. Nice start, Deki. And Sandra obviously gives him a bollocking after the game. But you'll remember our WhatsApp group was expressing similar sentiments, wasn't it? And
yeah, I think I described him as a bum, which I then later kind of rode back on quite quickly and quite spectacularly and incredibly humbly. So
you did, yeah. You very much owned that.
I was there with Sandra, who, by the way, it is like, are we definitely sure he has a sister? It's not like some sort of Donnie Darko style.
Ooh, maybe.
Like kind of vision.
Yeah, I did look this up earlier today just for confirmation. And on the 9th of Feb, 2022, the night of this game, at 21:44, James did type the immortal words, Kulusevski is a bum. To a minute later, Jack Pitbrook, Kulusevski is slow and one-footed. He's the ginger Lamella. to which I respond, so glad I wrote my background on him before anyone had seen him play. So, yeah.
Hang on, sorry, Kulusevski, this was the night of the Southampton game?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What time was my message?
Your message was 21:44.
So that was after, presumably after the game, or was it 8 o'clock?
No, it must. I reckon it's when Southampton had made it, probably shortly after they'd made it 3-2.
So I sent that message from the stadium during the game.
Yeah, yeah. We were all at the ground. I remember we were all at the game. I would have been sitting next to Jack.
So we're so professional.
Yeah, exactly. Just a little peek behind the curtain there. And then
Danny said, who's Kulusevski? Only joking. He won't listen to this, realistically.
Yeah, exactly. It's fine. Yeah, so, I mean, it's right. He's not rewriting history. Like, everyone was not just doubting him, but writing him off. And there's probably a lesson somewhere there.
Yeah, I think being nice about Brennan Johnson in the first half of the season is probably the lesson, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Kulusevski, it was a weird one, wasn't it? Because when he came, he did look
like a bum,
slow. He did look one-paced, and it was kind of, you know, that was in that period as well where him and Bentancur came right at the end of the January, and it did feel very much like Paratici had done nothing all month and then just called up his old mates at Juve. But obviously, Kulusevski responded very well and very quickly. His first start was then, as he talks about, that win at City, which was like 10 days after.
I really had lost sight of that being the kind of his story arc in that first month. Like the fact that he came on in that cup game against Brighton and wasn't great. Then they lost the next two games he played at home to Southampton and Wolves. And then the first start was away to Man City and he scored inside the first 5 minutes or whatever it was.
And then set up Kane's winner right at the end.
And fine, they had that Burnley game with Conte's big rant. But then after that, for the rest of the season, they were incredibly good. Like,
he was really good.
No, we haven't lost sight of the fact that Bentancur and Kulusevski were amazing in that run towards the end of the season, but I think the thing we might have lost sight of is how quickly that happened.
It was, and it kind of had to be, didn't it, to salvage Spurs' season. And in that piece as well, more recently, talks about the Chelsea 4-1 defeat. And this was really interesting because I remember after that game getting messages from people who'd covered Ange at Celtic and in Australia saying, you know, this will be huge for the team. It will really bond them. It will really kind of unify them. They'll see that this is absolutely how Ange wants to play and that he's never going to compromise, etc., etc. And wrote my piece off the game kind of on that theme. And it was, well, I think most Spurs fans thought, yeah, fair enough. I think most non-Spurs fans seeing that felt like this is massively just trying to justify and celebrate a really heavy defeat. And, you know, who knows? I guess we'll see in the fullness of time. But certainly Kulusevski, the way he talks, does back up that view that, you know, it's something that unified the players. He says, basically, I don't think about the fact that, you know, we lost the game heavily. He says, you know what I remember from that game? I remember the moments near the end when we almost made it 2-2. I remember Vicario saving shots with an energy that was bigger than the entire stadium. I remember that we kept attacking, and not because Andrew told us to, because when Destiny got sent off, he had no way of talking to us all. No, we kept attacking because we felt it was the right thing to do. And then he also talks about how powerful and amazing it was having kind of the crowd applaud them at the end of the game, which was a really special moment. And I do think, and you'll have a better sense of this than me, James, but it did feel that really, you know, already the relationship was strong, but that night it got even stronger.
Yeah. I mean, look, the fact that we've talked about that game on more or less every podcast we've done since is probably testament to how big a moment it was, and not just because it was a massive test of faith in that system for the players and the fans, but because they passed that test, I think.
Yeah, it'll be so interesting though when they play Chelsea again this season, because that was such a weird game. I mean, it's one of the strangest games, one of the most eventful games I can remember. And that chance to go Stamford Bridge whenever that game is actually played. I mean, we're still waiting for a date on that. And just on that, the sort of potential congestion, if Spurs, assuming City get through to the FA Cup semi-final, then that game on the weekend of April 20th will get moved. So Spurs have got, we're going to have two really big midweek games at some point in amongst this run of playing Arsenal and Liverpool as well.
And I think, isn't it almost certain that that Man City game just gets moved back to the midweek immediately afterwards, which will mean they'll play Manchester City on a Wednesday night and then Arsenal on the Saturday or Sunday? I think that's pretty much the because set, isn't it?
Because there are so few slots. But then when would Chelsea be?
Was that who knows?
I guess Chelsea aren't in Europe, so...
The suggestion seems to have been that they're waiting to see what happens with Chelsea in the FA Cup, but obviously, they're home to Leicester, who are not quite in freefall because they're still top of the Championship, but they're having a massive wobble. You would expect Chelsea to win that game. Then they're in the semi-final, and then like the only other slot is then the final when you can't play a Premier League game. So I'm not sure quite what they're expecting to happen, really. I don't think we mentioned this at the time, but it was quite odd they didn't play it when Liverpool played their game that was supposed to be the weekend of the League Cup final, which was they played at home to Luton midweek before the League Cup final, which, yeah, if you remember, would have been the midweek after Spurs lost at home to Wolves, which actually, I would argue, maybe would not have been a good time for them to have played it.
I think as well, the Premier League always, they do as much as they can not to put Premier League games on European nights, which that was, that Liverpool one. Obviously, I think they had to do it with Liverpool because Liverpool are still in Europe, so there are so few slots that it was basically going to be European one eventually, whereas obviously Chelsea, I guess the hope was that they could find one that wasn't. But also, clearly, we remember that Arsenal North London Derby game from 2022, which was postponed in January and didn't get played till May, even though neither team were in Europe. You know, obviously it suits the TV companies as well for it to be as late as possible. Although it would be quite funny if actually by then the jeopardy's gone and we know fifth place more or less is going to be Champions League and Spurs are fourth or something, and obviously Chelsea aren't going to have much to play for. But
that is the thing that we didn't really mention when we were talking about the coefficient, by the way, is that if this one, Spurs should obviously be aiming for at least fourth, realistically fourth, but you know, we'll kind of appease Postecoglou by saying at least fourth. But like fifth place now, they had to mess up quite badly to not get that. Like Manchester United are not going to win 10 games or 9 games or however many games they've got left. Like it's just not going to happen. So you know, let Manchester United, if they win 5 games, which I don't think is ludicrously low if you look at their fixtures, then Spurs are going to have to win 3 and draw. I mean, it feels like that should be relatively comfortable now.
I can't see how United finish ahead of Spurs. Also, there's a weird quirk now because Spurs play 2 games before the top 3 play any games. So there is, Spurs win their next 2 games, then there'll be 5 points behind top. So, you know,
the
could we discourse can start again. Let's have a break, and then when we come back, we'll look ahead to the first of those 2 games, which is Fulham away on Saturday.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the team's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new, Thursdays on FX, stream on Hulu.
Victorinox, the makers of the original Swiss Army knife, have been a reliable companion for life's everyday challenges, mastering functionality, innovation, iconic design, and uncompromising quality with its products. The Victorinox Swiss Army knife provides you with all the things you don't think about until you need it. Tweezers, a screwdriver, and even a corkscrew. With the Victorinox Swiss Army Knife, you can be prepared to master everyday life. You can find Victorinox Swiss Army Knives at Dick's Sporting Goods.
Hello, welcome back to The View from the Lane, where it's me, Charlie Eccleshare, with James Moore, Danny Kelly, somewhere raging and trying to fix his internet, and our thoughts are with him. Hopefully they'll be back in time for Monday.
Trying to sort his dongle out.
Exactly.
you could even bring yourself to laugh at a joke about a dongle.
That's going to get cut anyway.
Yeah, realistically.
Okay, well, let's go to that Fulham game. Fulham are pretty good. I mean, we've seen them. They've beaten United away. People will have differing views on how big a result that is. But clearly, you know, that was pretty significant. They beat Arsenal at home. They drew with them away. They've been in pretty good form. So much so that, and I found this amazing because I think he's such an important player to them. Paulinho missed a couple of games. And normally, I just think without him, they can't really function. But they did so well without him that he was on the bench for their last game at Wolves.
Can I throw you under the bus like you threw me under the bus, by the way?
Yeah.
I remember us talking about a few weeks ago before Fulham went to Old Trafford. And you saying, you not realising that Paulinho was suspended and saying Fulham had a good chance. And I said, no, he's suspended. And then you said, oh, but in that case, they've got no chance. And they won. So
yeah, I completely hold my hands up on that, because generally I found with Fulham, whenever I watch them with him, I think they're a really good side. Without him, I just think they lack something. So they did win without him, which is amazing. Then they didn't start him, but they lost to Wolves. I reckon he'll start, and he is a really good player. I mean, how do you see this one going? To what extent do you think Fulham will do what Villa did and respect Spurs and kind of go more defensive and sit back and try and frustrate?
Yeah, that is a good question. I mean, I'd be very surprised if they were massively expansive. I mean, I think they're generally quite a sort of solid team, aren't they? They don't leave the centre-backs too exposed. And as you mentioned, they've got Paulinho there in front sort of mopping up. So I don't imagine it'll be a sort of wild end-to-end game or a game where there's loads of space to exploit like Aston Villa last weekend. But I mean, Spurs should have the quality to win that game, shouldn't they? Surely now. I mean, and the confidence as well, which was a thing that maybe they were lacking a little bit before that. I mean, we know they struggled in the past to break down a low block. I don't think it'd be quite as severe as that. I don't imagine Fulham are going to kind of sit eight players behind the ball or whatever and just be completely impossible to play through. But I don't think they're going to take loads of chances, loads of risks. And I think there's going to be loads of space. So it feels like it's quite a big game for players like Maddison, who can kind of pick a pass and create a chance. Hopefully that first goal in, how long will that have been? Sort of 4 or 5 months will give him like a bit of a boost of confidence. Not that he seems like the kind of person who really needs that.
And
they'll get a job done.
Man at the
it really feels like it would be a bad time to drop points now. Like, it would like take the wind out of the sails a little bit. And I think Villa are at West Ham on Sunday. So, they're both playing Thursday night, and they'll be, you know, how fatigue is a factor there might depend on how many changes they both make between the previous league games, these midweek games, and the game at the weekend. But doesn't feel impossible Villa drop points again in that game.
No, I mean, they might have played extra time tonight.
Yeah.
Obviously, we're recording before this. But yeah, I think Maddison's previous goal had come in the home game against Fulham.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Which was, I mean, that Spurs won that game 2-0. It was fairly comfortable in the end. It was actually a bit of a portent for what was to come, because that was when Spurs were still, I mean, I guess they'd come off the Luton game, which was, it ended up being pretty tight, that they created loads in the first half. But it was quite a tough watch the first half hour, I remember, where Fulham did a bit like what Palace did and kind of just sat and frustrated Spurs. Obviously, that was at Spurs, so you would think they'd be a bit more expensive now. I mean, they are also in a position, Fulham, where, I know this isn't really how football works, but it's not like they're in any, you know, relegation trouble or anything like that. Like, you know, they might be willing to give it a bit more of a go. Though I think the reality for Spurs is teams do really respect how dangerous they are going forward. And they know, I mean, as Villa showed last week, that in the second half, they came out and tried to be a bit more aggressive, and it played completely into Spurs' hands. And so I suspect that, and it being Marco Silva, they will be fairly cautious, certainly early on. I mean, the big team news we're expecting is that Van de Ven is likely to be out. Postecoglou said as much yesterday. We'll get confirmation at the press conference tomorrow, which means Dragusin comes in. And I think that shows, you know, had this been the first half of the season, Van de Ven being out would have really terrified Spurs fans. As it is, obviously it's a big blow and he's massively important to how they play, and you look at their record with and without him and it is pretty striking. But different feeling now, James, with Dragushin as the replacement?
Yeah, I have to admit, I don't know loads about Muniz, the centre forward, who seems to have like started this year quite well for Fulham. I mean, it's funny, I don't know, you talked about this on the podcast earlier in the week. That substitution, Dragushin coming on for Van de Ven, felt like it was going to make such a big difference to that game, given how Van de Ven had played in the first half. But it was just, and this isn't a criticism or sort of, you know, dampening the praise on Dragushin, but like that it had so little impact on the game. That was a factor in so few instances after that. Like Spurs scored, obviously, twice incredibly quickly afterwards, and then controlled the game from there on in and didn't really get exposed at all. I don't think Villa really even made that many passes round the back. There were a few instances where he had to block a couple of crosses, I think, but he didn't have like a kind of foot race with Watkins at any point like Van de Ven had had. So if Spurs can kind of manage the game to avoid those kind of situations, then that would certainly make life a lot easier. But I mean, he looked incredibly solid. He looked reasonably good on the ball. And I know that was a thing that some people had some misgivings about. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see him actually play, hopefully a full match, touch wood, and see how he gets on.
I mean, yeah, I was thinking that it was kind of the perfect game, that Villa one, for him to come into. Like, it was long enough for it to feel like a proper performance. Obviously, it's good opposition, but it wasn't like he was being chucked on to a siege, you know, especially as they went down to 10 men. So he had a fair bit to deal with, and obviously Watkins is one of the league's best strikers, but in, as you say, a pretty controlled way. I mean, I suspect that it will be little different, the approach, in that Spurs will, you know, leave him and Romero back and basically back them to deal with Fulham's attacking threat, which will be a good test for him. I mean, because these teams obviously have played each other already at Craven Cottage this season. Van de Ven actually scored an own goal in that game, but it was such a different Spurs team. I mean, I guess from that game, I mean, I remember like Richarlison was one of the few kind of first teamers, but literally none of the Spurs 11 from that day will be expected to start, which obviously, you know, that was a massively scratched team, but does also show kind of how much has changed for Tottenham since that period. It is a really big game because, as you say, the momentum is really important, and so Spurs win, they're back in the top four, even games played, and it would set them up because then they have Luton at home, which is before the teams above them play, which feels like a game they really, really should win, and I think they will win. And yeah, it would mean they could be potentially looking up a little bit rather than looking down. Do you think they'll do it? You confident?
Yeah, I mean, I know this should really mean absolutely nothing, but their record at Craven Cottage, I think, is broadly quite good despite that League Cup defeat that you mentioned a minute ago.
Yes.
I think the fact, on a very basic level, they scored 4 goals on Sunday and 3 goals in the game before, it just feels like they're able to control the game slightly better now. It feels like they've sort of found a way of playing where they've not strayed too far from the kind of broader philosophy of Ange Ball, but they're keeping a slightly better lid on a match. Like this, that Palace game, when we talked about it, it wasn't always pretty, but they didn't leave themselves too exposed. Villa, for the most part, they kind of handled pretty well. I know Villa doing their weird tactical things did sort of play into Spurs' hands a little bit. So, yeah, they should win the game. I mean, Fulham have been a bit sort of hot and cold over the last couple of months, haven't they? I mean, I know like, they beat Arsenal over the New Year, gave Liverpool 2 really good games in the League Cup, smashed Brighton 3-0.
Yeah.
When was that, the week before last? So, obviously, they're a decent team capable of like troubling anyone. So, I don't imagine it'll be an easy game, but it is one Spurs should be able to win.
That game's 5:30 on Saturday, and what is also an FA Cup weekend, so which is why not many other Premier League teams are playing, or certainly not the ones at the top of the league. We'll be back on Monday to review that game and look ahead, I guess, to the international break, which comes at feels like quite a terrible time, especially as Spurs are building some momentum. And just to remind you, the show has its own official home on X/Twitter, at VFTLpodcast. That's at VFTLpodcast. Or email VFTL@theathletic.com. That's VFTL@theathletic.com. And for the best Spurs coverage anywhere, make sure you sign up to The Athletic. Take advantage of our latest offer of just £1.99 a month for 12 months. Simply go to theathletic.com/SpursPod to subscribe.
The Athletic.